22nd trip to Glasgow.
It's time again for the World on Three team's annual trip to one of the world's friendliest cities, Glasgow, for its celebration of Celtic music and its links to cultures across the globe. Celtic Connections has hundreds of concerts, Kayleys and other events, and we'll be bringing you some of the best of the lineup. From local heroes to glamorous visitors. Join Catherine Tickell for World on Three at Celtic Connections next Friday night at 11, live on BBC Radio 3.
It's 6:30, and time now for tonight's Opera on Three, a performance of Massenet's Thaïs, which was recorded at the Met and is introduced by Mary Jo Heath.
We're coming to you from the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and today we're sharing one of the highlights of the Met's fall lineup, Thaïs, Massenet's opera about a legendary courtesan and the monk who sets out to save her soul. Eileen Perez sang the title role, starring opposite Gerald Finley as the obsessed Atanael. Emmanuel Villaume conducted this ravishing score. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and our commentator Ira Siff is here with me. It's been 9 years since we've heard the sumptuous music of Thaïs here at the Met. But Ira, we always know it'll come back because sopranos can't resist taking it on.
Well, in the olden days, divas like Geraldine Ferrara and Maria Yaritza championed the title role. And in more recent decades, Beverly Sills, Renee Fleming. But the role of the monk, Atanael, is also quite a vehicle for the baritone.
And our audiences went wild for Eileen Perez and Gerald Finley. They were both singing their roles on stage for the first time back in the fall. Now, there is a figure from the 4th century known as Saint Thaïs of Egypt, but it's not clear whether she was an actual person or the stuff of legends. Anatole France wrote a bestseller about this colorful character in 1890, and that's what Massenet based his opera on just a few years later.
And that novel is somewhat satirical in tone, but Massenet's opera is not. It's a fascinating story about the battle between physical and spiritual love.
It also taps into the craze for exotica that was a part of French culture at the time. We'll hear that in the way Massenet evokes the setting.
But that exoticism goes alongside more standard lyrical music, such as Wells' the famous violin solo known as the Meditation.
Yeah, which is so gorgeous and memorable. The opera's in three acts and will be performed with two intermissions. We're about to hear the opening scene. Here's the synopsis. The monk, Atanael, returns to his austere monastery after having visited his home city, Alexandria. He's disgusted by how depraved the city has become, and he blames the courtesan, Thaïs. He admits that when he was younger, he nearly succumbed to her himself before turning to the monastic life. Now, he would like to save her soul. But Palamon, a senior monk, tells him he shouldn't meddle in the affairs of the world. Before he goes to sleep, Atanael prays, and in his dreams, he has an erotic vision of Thaïs. He takes it as a sign from God that he must go and convert her. And as the scene ends, he leaves the monastery. Ira, it's a fairly brief scene. It opens with solemn music.
It paints a gentle tonal picture of the monastic setting and the serious ascetic lives of the monks who live there.
But Atanael is agitated when he enters. It's hard not to see his condemnation of Thaïs is part of his fixation with her. And his dreams certainly reveal that to be the case.
Yes, the devout-sounding music gives way to sensual figures on the harp and the winds. The music becomes more and more suggestive, mirroring Atanael's seductive vision of Thaïs. It's interesting to watch him suppress those urges so fiercely when he wakes up, how he immediately translates them into religious zeal.
As Atanael leaves on his journey, we hear his prayers echoed by the monks. His voice grows fainter as he walks off into the distance, a beautiful effect. For this opening scene, here's the cast in order of vocal appearance. The five Cenobites are Daniel Clark Smith, Patrick Miller, Marco Antonio Jordao, Edward Hanlon, and Mark Sullivan. David Pitzinger is Palamon, and Gerald Finley is Atanael. The concertmaster is David Chan, and Emmanuel Villaume conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus in this broadcast of Massenet's Thaïs from November the 11th, 2017. The show curtain depicts swirling clouds with the light of heaven in the distance. The curtain rises on a sun-baked desert against a strikingly rich blue sky of early evening. There are boulders and ruins lying about, and the monks sit or lean against them. Ataniel wears dark robes with a beard and long hair. Atanael prays he will have the strength to save the soul of the infamous courtesan, Thais. That was the opening scene of Massenet's Thais, featuring Gerald Finlay as Atanael and David Pitzinger as Palamon in this Metropolitan Opera performance from November. We're about to hear the second scene now. It takes place in Alexandria, where Atanael arrives at the luxurious home of his old friend, Nicias.
Atanael has an aria railing out against this city, but the pulsating sensual music beneath his vocal line shows us the allure of Alexandria and the conflicting emotions it arouses in him.
He's clearly uncomfortable here, even though Nicias welcomes him with open arms. Nicias reveals that he is, in fact, Thais' current lover. He's purchased her company for the week, and this is their final day together. He laughs when Atanael informs him of his mission, but says Thais will arrive soon after a performance. And Nicias has his slaves help Atanael dress for the party.
And there's a witty quartet as the two young women notice how attractive Atanael is beneath his rough attire and demeanor. Nicias urges him not to take offense at their teasing and their laughter.
Atanael prays that his soul is armed against temptation. And finally, Thais arrives.
Now, Massenet gives Thais quite the diva entrance, a buildup of exotic-sounding harmonies and percussion, a chorus of admirers, all coming to a halt as she appears.
She has a tender little duet with Nicias as they celebrate the week they've shared, but acknowledge that it's ending. They sing, "Tomorrow I will be but a name to you." Now, Thais notices Atanael brooding, and he immediately tells her what he's there to preach, mortification of the flesh and penitence.
She answers in a sultry, insinuating tone, "What makes you so severe? Man is made for love." An ensemble ensues as everyone picks up Thais's melody and urges Atanael to join in the festivities.
As they taunt him, Atanael has a final outburst, declaring to Thais he will come to her home to bring her salvation.
And Thais ends the act with a triumphant high C as she answers, "Dare to come to me, you who defy Venus."
In order of vocal appearance, we'll hear Jung Chul Cha as Nicias's servant and Gerald Finlay as Atanael. The slaves, Krobil and Myrtal, are France Belmar in her network broadcast debut and Megan Marino. Nicias is Jean-François Bourras, and Thais is Eileen Perez. Emmanuel Villaume conducts.
Now, the first thing we'll hear in this scene is Massenet's marvelous orchestral evocation of Alexandria, a complete contrast to the desert atmosphere we just came from. We really get a sense of the grandeur and the beauty of this city. Listeners might detect even a hint of Wagner, whom Massenet greatly admired, in the majestic-sounding horn figures.
Right. Well, the set is an opulent room in Nicias' house. The walls are a deep turquoise, and there's gold everywhere, the palm trees, the latticework. Thais herself wears a shimmering golden gown, her hair falling in long golden curls.
Thank you. Comedienne, Thaïs, la courtisane, certe je la connais, pour mieux dire les miennes, encore pour un jour. J'ai vendu pour elle mes vignes et ma dernière terre et mon dernier moulin, et composé trois livres d'élégies. Et cela ne compte pour rien. Je voudrais la fixer, que je perdrais ma peine. Son amour léger et fuyant comme un rêve. Attends-tu d'elle?
Je veux la ramener.
Ah, mon pauvre ami, crainte d'offenser Vénus dont elle est la prêtresse.
Je veux la ramener à Dieu, j'arracherai Thaïs à ses amours immondes, et je la donnerai pour épouse au Jésus, pour entrer dans un monastère. Aïs, femme, suive aujourd'hui.
Crains d'offenser Vénus, la puissante déesse. Elle se vengera.
Et me protégera. Où puis-je voir cette femme?
Ici même, pour la dernière fois, elle y doit souper avec moi en très joyeuse compagnie. Elle joue aujourd'hui en sortant du théâtre. Elle viendra.
Prête-moi donc, ami, quelques robes d'Asie, afin que dignement je puisse figurer à ce festin que tu vas lui donner.
Grobille et Myrtale, très chères, hâtez-vous de parler, mon bon admire les plus beaux, ne t'offense pas.
regarde, vois bien, voici ta terrible ennemie.
Thank you. est ici pour toi.
Apporta-ti l'amour.
Io ti vesti bene, e sorret a morir son cœur. Il veut te convertir à sa sainte doctrine.
Enseigne-ti
le mépris de la chair, l'amour de la douleur, l'austère pénitence.
Oh, my gosh.
Thais dares Atanael to try to save her soul. That was Act One of Massenet's Thais, a performance from last November, coming to you from the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. We just heard Eileen Perez in the title role, Gerald Finley as Atanael, and Jean-François Borras as Nicias, with Emmanuel Villaume conducting the Met Orchestra and chorus.
Now, to clarify, this story is set in Roman Egypt, hence Thais referring to the goddess Venus. And earlier, Nicias said to Atanael, "Beware of offending Venus. She will be avenged." A bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah, and all of that sets the stage for the confrontation in Act Two. And that's coming up after this intermission. I'm Mary Jo Heath. Commentator Ira Siff is with me. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear from our Thais soprano Eileen Perez, and also from mezzo-soprano Anita Rochvelashvili, who's going to be starring in Verdi's Il Trovatore here at the Met.
And now, a Met cameo. For someone who keeps a low profile, John Fisher is everywhere.
I'm involved in the planning of the casting. I'm in constant contact with the conductor and the director. All the music rehearsals with the singers.
As assistant general manager in charge of music administration, Fisher leads an army of pianists, coaches, prompters, and others.
Most of the time, I'm halfway up the auditorium, listening to the balance and how it is all coming out together in the hall, and that's the responsibility of the music staff in general.
Singers rave about working with him, and the feeling is mutual.
I love working with singers. I love coaching singers. I always talk to every singer who comes in, and I said, look, you know, it looks a huge, huge space. It is a huge, huge space. Just release and trust your technique and your support and release it, and you'll get right to the back of the house. Any colour you want to sing, we'll hear it at the back.
In his student days, Fisher majored in composition and musicology. Opera was just another assignment, until...
I got involved with opera in that level by going to hear The Ring four times. The Ring cycle was being done in Scotland, where I studied. And I guess I got a little bit interested in it.
Eventually, he went on to work at La Scala, La Fenice, Deutsche Grammophon, the Welsh National Opera. But he didn't hesitate when, in the 1990s, the Met invited him to manage its music-making.
When you've got all the elements together, great conductor, this wonderful orchestra and chorus, where you're going to find better? And then these fantastic operas, the best cast you can imagine, and then you sit out and you listen, and it all washes over you, and that's very exciting.
John Fisher, in charge of music administration at the Metropolitan Opera. For the Met, I'm John Bischoff.
We're coming to you from the Metropolitan Opera with Massenet's Thais, a performance from November. As we mentioned, Eileen Perez was singing the role of Thais for the first time.
And we're looking forward to hearing her in another French role later this season as Gounod Juliette. No, but that's a role she sung before. To debut a role at the Met is very brave.
Yes, it is. Well, I got to speak with her back in the fall. She told me she'd been waiting to play Thais for a while, but that learning the role held a few surprises.
I really thought I had a sense of Massenet's writing from hearing performance of La Navarrese while in school at the Academy of Vocal Arts, and also having sung Manon by Massenet. I thought I knew him, and I love him. But this piece, wow, what a Massenet we're hearing. I know it's rarely performed, and I can see why. It's very delicate. It requires a lot of characterization and nuance and choice, and in the way that isn't just notated in the music. There's a sense of the drama that has to be present at every turn of all of the musical lines. It requires nuanced performances from everyone. Everyone. And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, pretty incredible. Now, you said you'd been looking forward to this since you sang Massenet's Manon about 7 years ago or something.
Yes, yes.
What is it about Massenet's music, sort of in a general way, that just grabs you?
I think it's the charm and the writing, avec charme, avec élan. You know, there's an elegance and an effervescent youthfulness to singing in French, but especially his music. And it feels cinematic. As a singing actress, you can make a decision, and every time you take a breath, you already have to have in mind the image and the word or the idea that you're trying to bring across. I think that's what attracted me to it, that you could make a new choice. And that these choices, when you make them, you have to be very well aware musically where you are. So I think it's that it requires the highest sense of vocalism, musicianship, and also you have to be allowing others to play with it as well.
You mentioned to me that this lady goes on quite a journey. Tell us about that.
It feels like a pilgrimage. This is a courtesan, but it's in a different world. So it's not the rejected outcast courtesan that we know in La Traviata or in other pieces. This is a woman who represents the height of hedonism, but of pleasure and voluptuousness that is revered and sought after and almost goddess-like. The gold that she wears, you know, for Egyptian culture was like having the flesh of the gods to wear gold. So to go from that moment, and when we see her alone in the aria where she addresses the mirror, "Dis-moi que je suis belle," she speaks about eternity. And you can hear the way Massenet writes éternellement. It's as if every syllable of that word is desperately trying to hold on to time passing. It's stopping time. She's frightened of death, but she's smart enough to realize what her world that she has conquered, how into nothingness it will be when she changes and she gets older. So I think that we see a character so different from other heroines in the repertoire. It's not about loving another man. It's about what is next for her. What is eternity and how do you hold on to it? And is it something tangible? I never thought about the last aria. It's after he calls her Saint Thais that those words just transform her. It's like having a transfiguration of a human being who used to hold on to all the things in this world but never felt free, reaching a moment where she is more whole and more satisfied than she could have ever imagined.
Eileen Perez, who's singing the title role in this broadcast of Massenet's Thais.
You know, as we said, this is a role that's always lured divas from its earliest days. And Massenet wrote it for the young American soprano Sybil Sanderson, with whom he was quite infatuated. Unfortunately, she had a bit of a wardrobe malfunction at the opera's premiere, and the scandal rather overshadowed the opera.
Oh, my. Well, fortunately, other divas rescued the opera not too long after. Well, in just a couple of days here at the Met, Verdi's Il Trovatore will return to our stage. In the role of the vengeful gypsy Azucena, we have mezzo-soprano Anita Rachvelashvili. She first took on this part at Covent Garden just last season and won raves. When I sat down with her recently, she talked about how the vocal demands compare to those of her signature role, opera's other famous gypsy.
You know, it feels much more comfortable than Carmen, because my voice been sounding dramatic since I was 25, 24 years old. Even if I'm young, my vocality, my range, I feel much more comfortable in Verdi roles. And I think Verdi is perfect for mezzos, because it's written perfectly. It's exactly like learning a technique, an Italian old technique, bringing it in alive. It's something that is very fascinating for me.
So to fill in our listeners a little bit, Azucena is a gypsy. Long ago, she saw her mother burned at the stake as a witch by the Count di Luna, and now her son, I'm using that in quotes, Manrico, and the Count's son are mortal enemies, and she is still obsessed with revenge. So Verdi originally thought of Azucena as the main character.
Yeah.
Do you?
Of course, Il Trovatore is an amazing name, and if you look, Manrico actually is the main character. But everything happens around Azucena, and she is the most complicated character in the opera because she saw her mother dying in front of her eyes, and then for revenge she takes the Count's child, brings him to burn, and she burns by mistake her own child. So that woman is completely crazy. I guess nobody can be normal after this kind of stuff.
I would think not.
And she raises this boy. That's why she's very fascinating for me, because she could love that boy. She could raise him as a good man, love him like a mother, and at the same time feel that pain all the time. Seeing him is constant pain for her. So she's very, very interesting character.
Wow. And we hear about that in her tour de force opening scene, starting with the aria Street de la Vampa. Can you talk about that a little?
That one has always been difficult because you hear of Street de la Vampa so many times. And when you start singing it, it feels like you're singing it again and it's nothing new. So I started to do my research and to find a way to sing it differently. And actually, I discovered that that was the easiest thing in the world. You just follow the score. You don't listen to anybody. You follow exactly what Verdi written on the score. It's all on the piano. I need to sing everything very soft on piano, very, like, never giving too much voice. Like she is just hallucinating, just talking with herself. Yes, of course, all the people are listening, but every time it's happening like that. She's the crazy gypsy of the gypsy camp. So every time she tells the story, yeah, again, oh my God, she's telling it again. So she knows that, and she tells that all the time. Every time she wants to send her pain out, she tells that story. But this time she was kind of trying to calming herself. And then sometimes this anger comes out when she sings forte, you know. And when I try to do this way, exactly how it's written, all the dynamics are written on the aria. There are so many. So if you do every single dynamic, it's very fascinating.
So Verdi laid it all out for you, and you just have to figure out
how to bring it to life. Yeah, exactly.
That was mezzo-soprano Anita Rachvelashvili, who's opening on Monday as Azucena in Verdi's Il Trovatore.
Really looking forward to hearing her take on this amazing, rich role.
Yeah, me too. She'll be starring alongside Maria Agresta, Young-Hoon Lee, and Quinn Kelsey, conducted by Marco Armiliato. Il Trovatore will be our broadcast in 2 weeks. We'll be back with Act Two of Massenet's Thais in just a moment.
It's really unusual that the most recognizable tune is in an instrument rather than a voice.
Met Orchestra concertmaster David Chan has played countless solos in operas, but the meditation from Thais is unique. The first time he was asked to play it was in concert.
I was like, I've heard every fellow violin student play it when I was young. It seems a little sentimental, and I don't know if it's for me. Now I think it's kind of become my calling card, and I love it every time I do it.
Massenet first introduces the melody between scenes, at the moment of Thais' spiritual transformation.
It almost takes on a dimension more than just an instrumental solo. It almost functions like a character. As a violinist, you're always going to be a little bit preoccupied with playing with the most beautiful sound that you can. But something about playing it in the context of the opera, it does translate the story.
After Chan's solo in Act Two, Massenet has him play the melody again with his section, and finally, you could say, as part of a trio.
The conflict and drama between the two main characters is what the meditation is tied up with. So it's appropriate that for their final duet, it comes back. But I think he also just knew a winner when he found one.
David Chan, Met concertmaster and today's violin soloist in Massenet's Thais. I'm Mary Jo Heath with commentator Ira Siff at the Metropolitan Opera. We're about to hear Act Two of Massenet's Thais, a performance from last November. Ira, let's talk through what happens. The first scene takes place in Thais's boudoir after the party. She's alone, and we see that she's troubled by the emptiness of her life. She sings what's known as the mirror aria, Dis-moi que je suis belle, pleading with the mirror to tell her that she'll be beautiful forever.
In the middle of the aria is a section where she imagines herself aging, losing the beauty that means everything to her. As Aileen Perez said, when the opening melody returns, it's intensified as Thais begs Venus for reassurance. Her phrases rise to a climactic high D on the word éternellement, eternally.
And then Atanael arrives. The rest of this scene is comprised of their duet, their emotional battle.
Well, Atanael's music reflects his assurance and his calm, but there's also pride and pomposity.
He says he offers her a kind of love that is new to her. Thais mocks him, saying, "You've come too late. I know all forms of love." But when he talks about eternal life for her soul, she's struck. These words resonate with her, and she asks him to tell her more about this new love. But he suddenly finds himself struggling against his own physical desire for her.
And at this point, they each pray, he to God to resist the lure of her beauty, she to Venus in a seductive incantation.
Atanael rallies, telling Thais bluntly that he has come from the desert to denounce her way of life, which he refers to as a sort of death.
And her music becomes fearful and defensive. She says it's not her fault she's beautiful, and she begs him for mercy.
Once again, Atanael offers Thais eternal life, and she begins to yield. But just then, we hear Nicias, who has come for his final night with her. Thais becomes hysterical, declaring, "I will remain Thais the courtesan."
She dissolves into peals of laughter mixed with sobs as Atanael leaves. But we sense that she is ready for a transformation, and that transformation is represented by the orchestral interlude called The Meditation, arguably Massenet's most famous piece. It features a ravishing violin solo that expresses both calm and yearning.
And the chorus can be heard softly in the accompaniment to this gorgeous melody. We can imagine Thais going through all the emotions this piece depicts. And by the next scene, she has decided to go with Atanael and enter a convent. He orders her to burn down her house and everything in it.
And Thais has a moving solo within their duet in which she begs Atanael to allow her to keep her little statue of Eros, the god of love.
She says Eros was not to blame for her going astray. It was her misunderstanding of Eros's message of what love is. But Atanael refuses when he discovers the statue was a gift from Nicias. Nicias and his friends, meanwhile, are still carousing. He's won a fortune at gambling and shows up at her house to celebrate with entertainment from a dancer and a singer. But then the people learn that Thais is leaving the city, and they see the flames coming from her house. They turn on Atanael in fury, ready to kill him. Nicias distracts the mob by tossing money at them, and this allows Thais and Atanael to escape as the act ends. In Act Two, we'll hear, in order of vocal appearance, Eileen Perez as Thais, Gerald Finley as Atanael, and Jean-François Bourras as Nicias. France Bellemare and Megan Marino are Crobile and Myrtal. The violin solo during the meditation scene is played by concertmaster David Chan. The solo dancer during the ballet is Serena Nicole, and Deanna Braywick in her network broadcast debut is La Charmeuse. Emmanuel Villaume is conducting the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus in this performance from the fall, November the 11th, 2017. The curtain opens on Thais's boudoir with deep turquoise-colored walls and a large bed in the center. She's dressed in a long, flowing gown of deep, bright pink. After the meditation, we shift to outside the house, which has an ornate golden door.
Oh. Je suis à toi.
Et tu m'es effrayant.
Il entend. chi suona le arti. E tua vesta alla flamma da dire, quieta is, e tu sei chi si fa, e tu alla posier, al vite bello blì. E tu sei chi si fa, e tu alla posier,
Le savoir que
Nicias distracts the people of Alexandria with money so that Thais and Ataneel can leave behind the city and the decadent life it represents forever. That was Act Two of Massenet's Thais, coming to you from the Metropolitan Opera. It starred Eileen Perez, Gerald Finley, and Jean-François Borras. Emmanuel Villaume conducted this performance from last November. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and commentator Ira Siff is here with me.
And that's the last we'll hear from Nicias. You know, he's a very sympathetic character, but from here on out, the drama will really zero in on Thais and Ataneel.
Coming up in this intermission, we're going to hear from Maestro Emmanuel Villaume and from our Ataneel baritone Gerald Finley. Stay with us. Here's a preview of this Saturday's matinee broadcast, live from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera. Giacomo Puccini's intense tragedy, Tosca. The unforgettable drama of three characters caught in a fatal junction of love and hate in the eternal city of Rome. Sonia Yontova is Tosca, the diva who arouses passions on stage and beyond. Vittorio Grigolo is her lover, Mario Cavaradossi, an idealist in art and politics. Jelko Lucic is their nemesis, Baron Scarpia, prime enforcer of a corrupt system. Emmanuel Villaume leads the Met Chorus and Orchestra in one of the pillars of the operatic repertory. Tosca, this Saturday's matinee broadcast, live from the Met. I'm Mary Jo Heath at the Metropolitan Opera, and we're in the second intermission of Thaïs by Jules Massenet, with a libretto by Louis Gallet, based on the novel by Anatole France. The production is by John Cox, with costumes for the role of Thaïs by Christian Lacroix, lighting by Duane Schuler, and choreography by Sarah Jo Slate. The production is a gift of Mercedes and Sid Bass. This Thaïs production was originally created by Lyric Opera of Chicago. The chorus master is Donald Palumbo. Musical preparation is by Donna Ratchik, Howard Watkins, J. David Jackson, and Leora Maurer. The assistant stage directors are Bruno Ravella, Gregory Keller, and Kathleen Smith-Belcher. The stage band conductor is Gregory Buchalter, and the prompter, Donna Ratchik. The stage manager is Gary Dietrich. Well, Ira, Thaïs had its run back in November, but our listeners are getting a Maestro Emmanuel Villaume doubleheader, this archival broadcast today, and Puccini's Tosca live next week.
You know, it's interesting because these operas were written in the same general era, and people often think of some of Massenet's works as French verismo.
Well, I got to speak with Maestro Villaume in the fall about Massenet, who wrote such a wide range of operas.
I would say for him, any material that's going to make great theater is going to make great music. And that's probably what interested him in Thaïs. He loved the novel of Anatole France because that would provide for him an incredibly intense occasion to showcase his use of religious music, or sometimes his abuse of religious theme and music. So you have everything. You have the devil, and you have God. You have sensuality. You have the sins, and you have the saints. And so you don't have to really choose. The description of the scene, the description of the incredible feast that can happen in some houses, that's also very interesting to a composer. So that tension between what's divine and what's devilish, what's saint and what is really sensual and even sexual, is amazing material for a poet. And that's what he is. He's a poet of music, he's a poet of theater. Like Puccini, like Verdi, he loves his heroines and is one of those men who has an incredible sympathy for women and who understand the human soul first and foremost through the journey of these women, through their tragic lives. And so for him, it's the occasion to express the human soul in all its contradiction, the life in all its aspiration, its beauty, its mystery, its danger. And so from that point of view, it's an absolute masterpiece.
Oh, it really is. You know, we can hear the two sides of the music. Is there a moment where they kind of collide?
Right. The collision, I don't know, but the transformation of Thaïs happens during the so-called meditation moment. She goes from courtesan to literally a saint through the work of this monk. He does convert her, but in the process, he falls madly in love with her and he loses his own faith. At the end, you have this beautiful theme of the meditation, which is a religious theme, that she's singing as she is dying and assenting to the event. And he's telling her, this is not true. God doesn't exist. Only love exists. And he's kind of speaking, screaming that to her, which is quite awesome and very difficult, actually, to put together because his interjections are not logical with the theme in general. But you don't have, let's say, a moment where you have the voluptuous music of Thaïs and at the same time the religious music of Athanaël, although you could argue that the meditation in itself has an incredible sensuality. And the mysticism that is expressed here with a certain femininity is in itself, I would say, maybe religious sensuality, if there is such a thing, which is the speciality of Massenet.
Emmanuel Villaume, who conducted the performance of Thaïs that we're hearing today.
You know, Massenet's fascination with religious eroticism went back a ways. His first success was his oratorio, Marie Magdalene, incidentally also to a text by Louis Gallet, who wrote the libretto for Thais. And later there was Herodiade, his opera dealing with the story of Salome and John the Baptist.
As Maestro Villaume said, it was a subject matter that seemed to play to his strengths. Well, I also spoke with Gerald Finley back in the fall, our Ataniel. We talked about the arc of this character, starting with his music at the very beginning of the opera.
Passionate, zealous, really. I mean, he's obviously committed to the cause. It announces him as a sort of a quasi-heroic, lyric, passionate warrior, really, on the cause of conversion, and he has his objective, and Thais is it.
He goes through this 180-degree transformation, and how does his music reflect that?
Well, it's interesting that, along the course of the journey, if you like, he actually manages to convince her to at least follow him into the desert towards this convent where he's going to deliver her. And on the way, he has to sort of cause her to burn all her things, which is very passionate and extremely sort of brutal almost. And they reach a point in the desert where her feet are bleeding from the journey. He's pushed her so hard, and suddenly the music transforms into this sort of harp music, light lyrical, sort of fluttering violins and flutes, and suddenly he becomes a wonderful lyric baritone after being sort of a Heldon baritone for the first part, and suddenly he's a lyric baritone. And that's a great challenge for a singer, to kind of rein in all that amazing sort of heroic stuff. I think Massenet does a wonderful job in sort of guiding the passion. The score is marked full of a very particular characterizations of the music, you know, with violence, with roughness, with great tenderness, with great passion. It's all there in the score. Mm-hmm. And so he had a very clear idea as to this journey. I think we just need to follow it.
So as an artist who sings a wide spectrum of music, what do you like to bring out in French romantic repertoire? Or what does it bring out in you? Maybe that's the other way.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to feel that this particular... Well, it's the French equivalent of the Puccini. It's the, you know, real concrete drama. And I love the sweeping lines. The language itself is very forward. It's very good for singing, in fact. Mm-hmm. It allows us non-native speakers to investigate that part of the voice, which can be enriched, if you like, by the language. Uh-huh. So that's quite nice. And I've always enjoyed French music. Ravel and Debussy are part of my song repertoire, as well as the Pelléas and Mélisande that I was doing here before. Mm-hmm. So I know it quite well, and I love it as a piece. I mean, I'm very partial to the French Romantic.
Well, you start here last season as Guillaume Tell, and that was one that really stayed with us all through the season as being one of the highlights of the whole Met year last year. He was a real hero, but I understand you enjoy playing flawed characters as well.
Well, that just makes them interesting. I think for me, as an artist, yes, there are musical challenges in whatever piece you're doing. Part of my love of being an opera singer is to examine the shade of the bright characters and to look at the bright side of the dark. You know, make them interesting.
That was Gerald Finley, who's singing the role of Ataniel in our broadcast today.
You know, we heard him mention the Oasis scene we're about to hear. You know, it was actually not in Massenet's original version of the opera. It was added in a revision a few years after the premiere. I cannot imagine the opera without it, because it illuminates such a crucial point in the journey of these characters.
Yeah, it's really a very special, quiet moment. Hi, Mary Jo Heath, here with commentator Ira Siff. The third and final act of Thais will begin soon. It's in three scenes, and the first one is this Oasis scene, so let's talk through it. Thais and Ataniel are on their way to the convent. Ataniel is forcing her to walk through the desert to atone for her sins. She's completely exhausted, and he takes pity on her. And this is the moment Gerald Finley was talking about. They pause to rest at an oasis near the convent. Ataniel brings Thais fruit and water, and they have a lovely duet here, full of tenderness towards each other.
It's the only moment in the opera in which these two characters sing in emotional and musical harmony. They share a gentle melody as their feelings meet for this instant before their paths will ultimately take them in opposite directions. Thais towards the spiritual, Ataniel towards his more earthly love for her.
Even as they are resting, the nuns from the convent approach them, and Ataniel entrusts Thais into the care of the abbess, Albina.
And when Thais tells him, "Farewell forever, we'll meet again in the heavenly city," she floats a soft high A pianissimo, and the meditation theme returns on the strings.
It's a stunning effect. Ataniel watches Thais enter the convent and is suddenly overcome by the painful realization that he will never see her again. We'll hear in order of vocal appearance Eileen Perez as Thais, Gerald Finley as Ataniel, and Sarah Cowden in her network broadcast debut as Albina, the abbess of the convent. Emmanuel Viome conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus in this performance from November the 11th, 2017. When the curtain rises, we are in the desert, and the white walls of the convent are visible to the right. Thais now wears a long, dark robe, her golden hair shorn off. She stumbles as she walks, barely able to keep going.
Thank you. Espère,
prie.
Providence divine, voici la vénérable Alvide, et ce sera pourtant le pain noir du courant. Elle vient vers nous et marche en
Ataniel realizes with anguish that he will never see Thais again. That was Act 3, Scene 1 of Massenet's Thais, and we're about to hear the opera's final two scenes. We begin back at the monastery on a stormy evening. Palamon comments that it's been 20 days since Ataniel returned from his journey with Thais, and that he's had nothing to eat or drink in all this time. Ataniel confesses to the elder monk that he desires Thais physically.
Ataniel has a solo here that's like a release of his pent-up desire and guilt as he repeats her name with increasing intensity.
Palamon laments that Ataniel ever left the monastery in the first place. Ataniel falls asleep, exhausted, but his sleep is disturbed by visions. The first is an erotic vision of Thais.
She even addresses him as she did when they first met, and then she breaks into strident laughter, her voice climbing higher and higher.
But this is interrupted by a second vision in which voices announce that Thais is dying. Ataniel, in despair, decides he must see her again. He rushes out into the storm to make the journey to the convent.
Massenet pulls out all the stops in this orchestral storm interlude, which also reflects Ataniel's emotional turbulence. When the storm music dies away, the meditation melody appears again, like the sun breaking through the clouds.
And we're at the convent for the opera's final scene. The nuns are praying as Thais is now close to death. Ataniel is permitted to be alone with her once more. This final duet is so moving, Ira. Mm. They are in two completely different worlds. Thais is at peace.
Yes, again, under her vocal line, we hear that meditation as she recalls their journey and how his word saved her soul.
But Ataniel desperately blurts out that he was lying, that nothing matters except human love, and he loves her. Thais, her soul already on the way to heaven, does not hear him.
In a sumptuously beautiful melody, her vocal line soars twice to high D's. These phrases mirror the meditation, but voiced in a way that reflects Thais's religious ecstasy.
As she dies, she sees heaven opening to her, and Ataniel is left alone, completely shattered.
And the opera ends with his agonized cry for pity.
In these final two scenes, we'll hear in order of vocal appearance David Pitzinger as Palamon, Gerald Finley as Ataniel, Eileen Perez as Thais, and Sarah Cowden as Albina. Emmanuel Viome conducts. We open again on the monks in the desert, but in the second scene, we are within the convent walls. Thais is framed like a religious icon, wearing a white gown, seated on an elevated altar draped with flowers and candles laid before her.
Thank you. cabane e no gra e no fri riposi nel littorage e le disperserè.
Thank you.
Thais, the former courtesan, dies in a state of spiritual ecstasy, while Ataniel the monk must live with the agony of his all-consuming love for her.
And what a transcendently beautiful final scene, Mary Jo. The entire opera seems to build to this most stunning moment.
That was the finale to Massenet's Thais, coming to you from the Metropolitan Opera, a performance originally recorded live on November the 11th, 2017. It starred Eileen Perez in the title role and Gerald Finley as Ataniel, with Emmanuel Villaume conducting the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus. The music producer for this Metropolitan Opera broadcast is J. David Sachs, and the operations director is John Kurzweil. Ed Hartley and Robert Hewitt are the broadcast engineers. Our senior radio producer and editor is Ellen Keel. The show producer is John Bischoff, the producer is William Berger, and the associate producer is Lee Allen Femme. We had production assistance from Yolanda Williams, Michael Griebel, and Geisa Kudlock. The broadcast stage manager is Lori Squire. The executive producers are Mia Bongiovanni and Elena Park. The Metropolitan Opera's music director designate is Yannick Nazet-Séguin, and the general manager is Peter Gelb. So, Ira, it was great to have a chance to share Thais with our Saturday radio audience, since it was an opera that was on stage last fall. But next week, we'll come right back to the present.
We certainly do, with another baritone who forgets God when faced with a beautiful woman, but this one's name is Scarpia.
That's right. Next Saturday's broadcast will be the Met's new production of Puccini's Tosca, starring Sonia Yontcheva, Vittorio Grigolo, and Jelko Lucic. And once again, Maestro Emmanuel Villaume conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus.
Oh, goodness me, that put us through the emotional ringer, a serious Saturday night weepy. Thank you very much to Mary Jo Heath and Ira Siff. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media. And you hear it on BBC Radio 3 through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. If you miss any of these broadcasts, they're available for you to listen again for 30 days. All details are, as usual, on the Radio 3 website, where you'll find full listings of all the operas still to come. And that performance Mary Jo Heath mentioned of Puccini's Tosca from the Met will begin next Saturday evening at 6:30 here on BBC Radio 3, and I'll be here with you for that, and I can't wait. Actually, there's more opera before that in the Thursday opera matinee. Rossini's Moses in Egypt, performed at the Bregenz Festival last summer, telling the story of Moses and the Israelites' escape from Egypt. It's also a love story between Pharaoh's son, Amenophi, and the Israelite Elsie. Hear the opera Thursday at 2 in the afternoon. Now, if you were listening to Radio 3 a little earlier today, you'll have heard pianist Paul Lewis on this lunchtime's Music Matters. Paul's about to set out on tour in a series of recitals exploring the music of Haydn, Beethoven and Brahms. And he was talking to Tom Service about the parallels and connections between these composers and their works. Now, if you missed that programme, you can catch the repeat on Monday evening at 10 or listen again via the Radio 3 website. Now, I mention all that because I have a recording by Paul Lewis to play for you now. This is Schumann's Fantasy in C, which began life as a one-movement love letter to Clara Wieck, the object of Schumann's affection for many years as the couple waited the court's permission to marry, very much against the wishes of Clara's father. Schumann wrote, "The first movement of the fantasy is the most passionate I have ever composed. It is a profound lament on your account." In its expanded version, the fantasy became a three-movement grand sonata, written to raise funds for a monument in honour of Beethoven. But none of Schumann's passion is lost in this opening movement. It's full of romantic yearning that searches for resolution.
Thank you.
Played quite a bit of Schumann's piano music over the last week or so on Radio 3. I think that's my favourite. You sense that pianist Paul Lewis has real affection for that work too, don't you? Schumann's public display of passion for his Clara and a tribute to Beethoven thrown in for good measure in his Fantasy in C, Opus 17. This is Mark Freiss with a question to tickle the grey cells. What's the connection between the following composers? William Grant Still, Florence Price and William Dawson. All American, all black, and all celebrated as symphonic composers. Tomorrow afternoon, Tom Service explores their works and links their writing back to Dvorak's belief that after his New World Symphony, American music would be led by black composers and musicians. The listening service is at 5 here on BBC Radio 3. New music coming next after a reminder that weekday mornings have enjoyed a refresh.
One of the things I love about presenting Essential Classics is that we play everything. The only bar to entry is that it has to be something we love.
Everything from the great classics to unknown gems. If you love music and you want to know more about it, this is the place to be. I can't think of a brighter soundtrack to your morning.
Join me, Susie Klein.
And me, Ian Skelly, for Essential Classics.
every weekday at 9 in the morning on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3 at 10 o'clock. It's time for Here and Now, our weekly look at the world of new music in performance. Here's Tom McKinney.
Welcome to Here and Now, and a full concert recorded at last autumn's New Music Northwest Festival. It brought together the BBC Philharmonic and Manchester-based ensemble Saffa to perform music by Larry Goves, Mario Duarte, Laura Bowler, Tom Coult, Grace Evangeline Mason, Daniel Kadane and David Horn, a set of composers all with strong connections to Northwest England. Also tonight, a track from a recent album of electric guitar works by another Northwest composer, Ian Vine, Feedback Pieces. And our regular Sound of the Week slot is introduced by Alwyn Pritchard. With me throughout tonight's Here and Now is Mark Herron, who was conducting the concert from the New Music Northwest Festival, which was recorded in Salford at the BBC studios at Media City. Mark, thanks for joining us. Now, just tell me a little bit about the festival. So what year was the first? How often does it take place?
Well, historically, the RNCM, in partnership with BBC, has run three composer festivals a year for really quite some time now. And these have usually been devoted to one single composer, but then we decided, and I think this was about the fourth time it happened, that every 2 years we would devote one of those three composer festivals to the Northwest's new music scene in general and give as much exposure as possible to composers who have a connection with the region, either by having been born there or studied in Manchester or Liverpool, or perhaps being on the faculty of the RNCM or Manchester University Composition Department, and so on. So I think this was the largest one yet, and there was about sort of 35 or so performances over the week.
And who does it involve then? Because there's lots of different organisations involved in this, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the RNCM is the sort of driving force behind it, so most of the performances took place there. We also have a fantastic connection with the University of Manchester's Composition Department, which is just across the road, so there was one day which was embedded in the university. There was also an event at Cheetham's with the new music ensemble there, with music by their composers, their young composers. And the University of Salford also, and of course the BBC Philharmonic.
Well, we're going to hear a piece by, because you also teach at the RNCM, you're a conducting teacher there. We're going to hear a piece by one of your colleagues to start tonight, Larry Goves. Yeah. Tell us about this piece, Hollow Yellow Willow.
Well, I think of the five orchestral pieces, Larry, the grand old age of 37. He's the sort of daddy of the composers on show in this programme. Sorry about that, Larry. and this is, it's actually, if anybody knows the music of Larry Goves, this is sort of calm and easy and simple and really,
I was
really
shocked.
Rather lovely. I'm
I
sure
was
you were.
Shocked by it. I know Larry's music very well, and it was just never for a second. There wasn't one single note in this that would have characterised by anything he'd written before.
Absolutely. It's sort of, I don't know whether this will be a new departure or just a little